So Matthew 13, and we started a series last week in Matthew 13. It's a chapter of seven parables. It's a cluster of parables. And if you remember, Matthew in his gospel is being selective. It's not sort of 101 tales of the life of Jesus, but it's all been carefully crafted. He's developing an argument. He's emphasizing particular truths. And therefore, as we look at Matthew's gospel, there's a unity because he's advancing a particular theme and argument. He's making a point. And therefore, we're to understand the parables within the overall scheme of Matthew's gospel. It isn't just a case of, we ought to talk about the parables now. It comes within the flow, within the scheme of Matthew's gospel. And later in the series, we'll look at actually just the flow of Matthew's gospel, how it all fits together. But we're to understand it in that overall scheme. So, some reminders. Who is Matthew writing to primarily? Who is his audience as he writes his gospel? Yeah, that's right, the Jews. And what is his theme? What is it he's particularly trying to... I'll take that question back. His theme is the kingdom of heaven. What is the kingdom of heaven? It is that, but it isn't that.
God reigns on the earth?
It's where God reigns, yeah. It's where God reigns. Where does God reign if it's the kingdom of heaven? It's not a trick question. Where does he reign? In heaven, right. So, okay, it's where God reigns, where God's in charge, where God's will is done. And God's will is done in heaven, isn't it? That's where he reigns, the kingdom of heaven. And the Jews are longing for the day when that heavenly reign will break in upon the earth. It'll break into this cursed world so that, as the Lord's Prayer says, that as you go, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So longing for the day when the reign of God will break in upon the earth, and that what goes on in heaven, his rule there, will therefore be his rule upon the earth. That's what they're waiting for. That's what they're looking for. In their minds, when God's reign breaks in upon the earth, when the kingdom of heaven comes, what's going to happen? Jewish minds thinking this. What are the Jews thinking when the reign of God breaks in upon the earth? What's going to happen? Yep. So it's going to be the Romans are going to be defeated. So it'll be defeatable their enemies. Absolutely. Other things are going to come in on that. Punishment to their enemies. What else is a Jew looking for? What's going to come to an end? Yeah, so peace, war's gone. Go on, anything else? What, some of the big things that are... obviously all those are big things. What else is going to go?
The devil
be defeated, end of him. Do you remember we talked last week in Isaiah? It talks about like a sort of shadow, a blanket, a covering over all the people. That's going to be taken off. What's that covering? Yeah, what do we all live under? And one day it'll go for God's people. Death. All right? So they're looking for the day when the reign of God comes upon the earth. Their enemies will be punished. There'll be the punishment of the wicked. There'll be a renewed, restored Israel. And Israel will expand to embrace the redeemed of the nations who will worship Israel's king. It'll be the end of death, sorrow. The end of the curse. It'll be a new age, a golden age of peace, joy, and blessing. And in fact, there'll be a new heavens and a new earth. Everything will be different. And best of all, God will be with us. We look at that passage in Isaiah, which says, Our God reigns. They'll be able to say, well, when our God reigns, all these things will happen. Because our God reigns in heaven, So it's all going on in heaven, but we don't see it upon the cursed earth. So when the kingdom of heaven comes, what's going on in heaven will happen on the earth. As his will is in heaven, so it'll be on the earth. And therefore, when they expect the kingdom of God to come, this long-awaited salvation, they're expecting it to be dramatic, public, cosmic, explosive. Everyone's going to know about it. Obviously, if you abolish death, if it's the end of the curse, if it's the punishment of the wicked, you know, you can't do those things on the quiet, can you? It's going to be dramatic. Everyone will know. And key in their thinking, too, is the place of the Messiah in all of this. We thought about they have different views of Messiah. But basically, the kingdom of heaven is going to come with Messiah. So in their minds, it is, as we talked about, here's the old age. The age of sorrows and the curse and death. The kingdom of heaven will come. The reign of God will break in. And then you'll have a new age. It'll be the end of the old age and the beginning of the new age, says the Jew. That's what's in his mind. That's how he looks at the world. That is expectation. That is conditioning. But of course, the kingdom of heaven doesn't come like that, does it? As you saw last time, when Messiah comes, he announces the kingdom, and you can see it's coming because people are healed, so the curse is going into reverse. People are even raised from the dead, so death is being pushed back. Demons are being cast out. Satan's being defeated. The kingdom of heaven is here. God's intervention has started. And, you know, he talks about the poor in spirit. You know, theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Already you can enter the kingdom of heaven, he says. But this new age begins before the old age has passed. This is actually this is what's happening. So there's the old age. The kingdom of heaven comes. Now you have the new age. But the old age hasn't stopped. The old age is carrying on, though the new age has started. What takes place there? What's happening at that point, when the old age stops? Second coming, yeah. So Christ is, that's Christ's first coming. That's the second coming, when the old age will stop. So that's what's taking place. So the kingdom of heaven has been inaugurated. It started, but it's yet to be consummated. It's yet to come to all its fullness. It's what commentators, theologians call the already, but not yet. It's already here, but it's not yet come in all its fullness. That's what actually happens. The coming of the kingdom is progressive. The two ages, they overlap. Now that, to the Jewish mind, was shocking. It was contrary to their whole conditioning. And in fact, if you listen to Jewish writers and Jewish rabbis today, they still say, well, of course, Jesus can't be Messiah because the new age hasn't begun. It's still the way Jewish minds think today. And therefore, in the Jewish mind, there's this fundamental objection to Christianity. This fundamental objection to Jesus being Messiah. Because, of course, what happens to Messiah? What happens to Messiah, which is unthinkable to that sort of Jewish conditioning? He dies on a cross. Yeah, he suffers. He dies a cursed death. Now, of course, Peter is able to say, 1 Peter 1:11, he says, searching what or what manner of time the Spirit of Christ who was in them was indicating when he testified beforehand the sufferings of Christ and the glories that would follow. Of course, the Old Testament teaches both the sufferings and the glories. The Jews couldn't reconcile the two. They couldn't understand how you can have a suffering Messiah and yet a Messiah who's also glorious. Peter says, well, of course, he suffers first, then the glory comes. The cross and then the crown. But the Jews couldn't reconcile it. And that's why when they looked at those passages of a suffering servant, they assumed it was talking about Israel. Can't be talking about Messiah, because Messiah is victorious. It must be talking about Israel. And even the disciples don't get it. The disciples keep filtering out. When Jesus talks about suffering and death, the disciples keep filtering it out. Thinks, well, he can't be talking about himself. You remember, Peter actually takes Jesus and says, oh, no, this can't be happening to you. And those two disciples on the Emmaus Road, they say, you know, we thought he was going to bring in the kingdom. But he died. They're still thinking like that. Because they're all the time looking, they're reading the Old Testament with that conditioning. That's how the kingdom of heaven is going to come. It's very interesting, isn't it? How, if that's what the Jews were doing, they'd read the Old Testament and they read it through the lens of their conditioning. I wonder how much of Scripture we read through the lens of conditioning. There's lots of things that we don't actually see. We filter it out because we come to it with a sort of set mind as to how the kingdom of God works, how God does things. So there's lots of Scripture we never see because we're conditioned to think in a certain way. Interesting thought, isn't it? That's why we must pray, Lord, open my eyes. Because if you just leave me to it, I'll come at it as a, with all my upbringing, with all my worldview, with all the things that are, and I just won't even see it. It's not a case of even seeing it and dismissing it. I may not even see it because of my conditioning. Okay. So what Matthew's doing, he's writing to the Jews to resolve these difficulties between what they expect, this sort of, you know, crash, bang, wallop, old age end, new age begun, and what is actually happening, where the coming of the kingdom is progressive. And the parables, as they come in here, they're dealing with this disparity between expectation and fulfillment. And you even get it in the run-up to chapter 13. We read here, look at verse 46 of chapter 12. While he was still talking to the multitudes, behold, his mother and brothers stood outside seeking to speak to him. Then one said to him, look, your mother and your brothers are standing outside seeking to speak with you. But he answered and said to the one who told him, who is my mother and who are my brothers? And he stretched out his hands towards his disciples and said, here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. How is that even, that little just throwing it in? Obviously it happened, but Matthew's putting it here because how is that undermining the whole Jewish way of thinking? You've got people on the outside and you've got people who are on the inside. There are people on the outside. Okay, it's physical, it's literal, but Matthew's making a point, isn't he? There are people standing outside and there are people who are inside with the king. So what's Matthew's point? Think of those who are on the outside. That's right. And those on the outside, what sort of relationship do they have towards Jesus? And they're mothers and they're mothers. They're his mother and brothers. Where would you expect those who are closest to Messiah to be? You expect them to be right on the inside, wouldn't you? To the Jewish mind, your pedigree is absolutely essential, isn't it? Every Jew says, I'm a child of Abraham. Child of Abraham is on the inside. Child of Abraham is with the king. Child of Abraham is going to have the kingdom. And here you have people who aren't just children of Abraham. They're actually related to the Messiah himself. And they're standing outside. So your pedigree, your bloodline, you can be a child of Abraham, you can even be directly related to the Messiah. But what actually counts is not your bloodline. What counts is whether you do the will of the king. That's going to determine who's inside and outside the kingdom. It's those who obey the king who are inside the kingdom, not those who have got the right pedigree. There's going to be no preferential treatment for the Jews. They're all waiting. This is for us. So you see, even in the run-up to chapter 13, he's not just throwing it in and saying, oh, yes, no, we can be. He's making a point. Matthew's making a point. It's not your pedigree. It's whether or not you obey the king. Okay, so then that brings us now to chapter 13. We looked at this very briefly, the first two verses. On the same day, Jesus went out of the house, sat by the sea, and great multitudes were gathered together to him. So he got into a boat and sat, and the whole multitude stood on the shore, and we said that you can see he's the king because Jesus is sitting while the crowds are standing. Everyone in the presence of a king stands. The only one who can sit is the king. So he's sitting there standing. He's also sitting on the waters. And if you know the Old Testament, the waters are the place of chaos. The waters are the place of threat. The waters are the place, the domain of Satan. Often you talk about it being the sort of the sphere of Leviathan, this great sea monster. It becomes a sort of a picture of Satan. So there's Christ sitting as king, there standing in the presence of the king, and he's sitting on the waters to show his authority. The waters are still under him. He has complete authority. So now the king will speak. And this is what he says. So I'd like to read, please, verses 3 to 9 of chapter 13. Thank you. Yes, it's a parable. We'll talk a bit later about, not tonight, but what parables are, what they're about. How do we know this is more than just a story? What is it that Jesus says that tells you that there's more going on here than just a story? What phrase does he use? Yeah, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. What's he saying? He's saying this is for everyone. This is for everyone who's going to... There's something here to grasp, isn't there? Am I just talking about seed and sowing? Well, actually, says Jesus, no, because behind the story, there's a greater reality. There's something here for you to grasp. But if you're willing to hear it, you'll pick it up. You'll understand it. There's a spiritual thing, spiritual principles, which Jesus now explains to his disciples. We'll just look at the parable sower. I'm not sure how far we'll get with the parable sower tonight, but we'll see how far we can get on. Therefore, hear the parable of the sower. Verse 18. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, so I'll stop there. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom. Okay, so there is a greater reality behind the story, because it's talking about the kingdom. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom. So behold, a sower went out to sow, as he sowed some seed. So the seed is the word of the kingdom. The seed is the word of the king. So the kingdom of heaven will come through the word. Through the word of the king. That's how it's coming. And that word is scattered. That word is sown. It's not a word sort of locked up and hidden. It's a word that's scattered around. And when it's scattered, it falls on four different grounds. The word of God, the word of the kingdom, meets with four different responses. What's the significance of four? It's the world, isn't it? You can think we talk about the four corners of the earth, the four winds. In Genesis, there are four rivers that come out to water the earth. It's just simply saying the world is this is summing up the world. Okay, so when the kingdom of heaven comes, it comes through the word, and it meets the world. And there are four sorts of responses in the world that you're going to get when the kingdom comes. And the first is this, verse 4, as he sowed some seed fell by the wayside and the birds came and devoured them. As you probably know, the Palestinian fields, they weren't big fields, they were small fields, passed down and handed out to family and so on and kept in families. And you can imagine these small fields that running between them, there are pathways, and those pathways have been walked up and down for generations. So they're just made up of compacted earth that's been hardened in the sun. So when seed lands on these pathways, these waysides as they're called, there's no way the seed can penetrate the soil, like concrete. And the birds come down and devour the seed. And then Jesus gives the explanation, verse 19, when anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, then the wicked one comes and snatches away what was sown in his heart. This is he who received the seed by the wayside. So it's a picture, isn't it, of people hearing about the kingdom of heaven, but they are so hard-hearted that the word makes no impression upon them at all. There's no impact, no change. They can't even remember what they heard. Because it's not a bird that swoops down, Satan swoops down and snatches the word away. So there are some people, when the word of the kingdom comes, there are some people who it makes no difference to whatsoever. It changes nothing. They can't even remember what it was about. Because Satan's taken the seed. Okay, second response, verse 5. Some fell on stony places where they did not have much earth, and they immediately sprang up because they had no depth, because they had no depth of earth. But when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. So here you have a picture of stony ground, stony places, and you can think about stony place. There's lots of stones, so it's got a very thin layer of sort of soil, hasn't it, in amongst the stones. But any seed that's falling upon it, because the ground is stony, the roots can't go down. They can't penetrate through the stony ground. So when the seed germinates, all the nutrients that are in the seed, well, they can't go down with roots because there's nowhere for them to go. So it's all converted into rapid upward growth. That's what you get. So it grows very quickly. You get long, spindly bits growing. But then as soon as the sun comes out, because there's no root, because there's no moisture, the plant withers away. And it withers away just as quickly as it sprang up. It springs up very quickly, and it goes very quickly. The whole thing comes and goes. It's very fast. So what does it mean? Well, verse 20. He who received the seed on stony places, this is he who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. There's that word immediately, you see, there's an immediate response. Yet he has no root in himself, but endures only for a while. For when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he stumbles. So here are people, when they hear the word of the kingdom, they respond to it with joy. Great joy. I mean, you can think of how Jesus was received, can't you, by the crowds. Tremendous joy and enthusiasm and delight and all the rest of it. But it doesn't last. As quickly as it comes, so just as quickly it goes. Because there's no root. So the word penetrates, if you like, the surface soil of the heart. But underneath, the heart is just as hard and stony as ever it was. There is an apparent change, but it's only superficial. It's not of any lasting effect. And therefore, any change is short-lived. And as soon as they begin to suffer for the word, as soon as they begin to suffer for the king, well, they don't want to know. Just as quickly as it's picked up, just as quickly as it's put down again. Then you have the third type, verse 7. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up and choked them. You can think about flowers and weeds in your garden. The flowers come up, the weeds come up, and the weeds and the flowers are neck and neck. And if you leave them to get on with it, come out a couple of weeks later, all the flowers have gone, all you've got is weeds, haven't you? Because the weeds just take over. They just choke out the flowers. They grow more vigorously. But of course, it's not weeds here, is it? It's thorns. What's the significance of thorns? The curse, that's right. That's the curse. So this is a cursed age. The old age is a cursed age. So when the word of the kingdom comes to some people, there's a response, isn't there, that is a thorny response, a cursed response. Verse 22, now he who received the seed among the thorns is he who hears the word, and the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becomes unfruitful. So here are people who start off well. The word appears to root in their hearts. There is apparently change. These people profess to become Christians. There seems to be conversion. It seems to be real. They're baptized. They join churches. They're committed to the work of the gospel. Some will become missionaries. Some will become pastors, preachers. But in the end, it comes to nothing. Why does it come to nothing? Yeah. Absolutely right. Yeah. So it talks about the cares of this world, deceitfulness of riches. Sorry. They don't produce any fruit, do they? Because these other things take over. In other words, what's going on in their lives? Well, Christ appears to be ruling their lives, but in their lives there's always other things going on. There's always other things going on which seem to be, and it can be things, it can be people, or something, or someone, or something, that seem to be as important to them as the king. It's always there, growing alongside the king. So when it comes to obeying the king, there's always sometimes a competition, competing interests. And those things which compete with devotion to the king are never really dealt with. They're never uprooted. They're never ruthlessly controlled. And therefore it's only a matter of time before those things grow up and choke out the word. And as Libby says, there's no lasting fruit. So Christ will become to that person less and less. It doesn't happen all at once. It happens over time. Their devotion to Christ becomes conditional. Their priorities become confused. They become preoccupied with other things. They start to find fault with kingdom life, because the word of the kingdom has brought them to this point. So they might find fault with the Bible. They might find fault with Christians. They might find fault with church life. They might find fault with something to do with the kingdom. And it goes on. They never have enough time for Christ, but they always seem to have enough time for what they want to do. They reject ultimately the cross as a way of life because they want to belong in the old age. They don't like the idea of a cross and suffering for Christ and dying to self. And the word is no longer shaping their lives. And the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches, little by little, take over. And the word is choked. Often it starts off in little decisions, but little decisions become crowning decisions. It all looks so good. And then one day they walk out on Christ. And we all know people like that. And they may have had a Christian profession for 20, 30 years. And it's heartbreaking. And the fourth is verse 8. But others fell on good ground and yielded a crop, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. And the meaning we're told is verse 23. But he who received the seed on good ground is he who hears the word, understands it, who indeed bears fruit and produces some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30. Here you've got good ground hearers. They do more than just hear. They do more than just understand. The word roots in their hearts. It becomes a part of them. And their lives are transformed. And what makes them clearly God's people, clearly children of the kingdom, is there's fruit. There's a harvest. And of course, if it's the word of the king, the fruit will be king-likeness, won't it? If it's the word of Christ, the fruit will be Christ-like fruit. The word reproduces after its own kind, doesn't it? If it's the word of the king that's coming into their hearts, then it will reproduce after its own kind. They'll start living like the king. They'll start behaving like the king, thinking like the king, loving the king, serving the king. They'll want what the king wants. They'll hate what the king hates. It's kingdom life taking over. And willingly it takes over. It's a life of fruitful discipleship. Okay, and then Jesus says, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. Okay, so we've raced through that, really. You've got these two models here, haven't you? That's the Jewish one. old age, crash, bang, wallop, end of the old age, new age. This is what's actually happening. The old age carries on, and the new age begins, so that you can be part of the new age, but you're still living in the old age. All right? Now, how does this parable explain the already, but not yet? How does it deal with this disparity between expectation and fulfillment? How is Jesus addressing in the Jewish mind that it's this model, not that model? What's going on in the parable that's telling you that? There's a number of facets to it.
There are four responses.
Yeah, go on, Gavin, say a bit more. Yeah, exactly. So if it was all crash, bang, wallop, you wouldn't have four responses, would you? You have two responses at most, wouldn't you? You'd have all those who just get thrown out and all those who become children of the kingdom. But actually, you've got four different responses. And it tells you the kingdom's not irresistible, is it? And the Jews said, when it comes, who can stop it? But here, if you look at it, it is apparently resistible, isn't it? It's not apparently, it's not universally successful. It is apparently defeated at times. There are disappointments. The kingdom is not what would happen. Because the ages overlap, there are powerful forces from the old age operating upon those who receive the word of the new age. Okay? Just look at those powerful forces. The first is the ruler of this age, okay, is the wicked one. So there are some who don't even know there is a new age. Because even though you tell them about the kingdom of heaven, because he snatches the word away, they don't even know it exists. As far as they're concerned, the world in which they live, that's how it was, that's how it is, that's how it ever will be. Most of what we hear in the media, yeah, most of the people we meet, that's their view of the situation, isn't it? This is the only world there is. Evolution, no God, this is who we are, nothing's going to change. And you can tell them about it, but it's like they never even heard it, isn't it? Because the real reason they're like that is because the God of this age, the God of this world, the ruler of this age, just takes the seed away. Every time it's sown, it goes. What about the second one? What is it about the age of the second one that's resisting the kingdom? What is it that's causing the problems? The stony ground. Yeah, but it's more, if it's the verse 21 is really putting its finger on it. Yeah. Yeah, so it's there's no roots, so difficulties. What shape are those difficulties coming? Yeah, go on. Yeah. It's persecution, it's trials, isn't it? It's the Jews said, when the kingdom comes, that's the end of all the troubles. There will be no hostility because the king will rule and all the enemies will be destroyed. On the contrary, when the word comes, it's going to face the hostility of the old age that's under the rule of Satan, the old age that hates the king. So if you embrace the word of God with joy, if you start living for the king in a world that hates the king, if you start living by the values of heaven here on the earth, where those values are rejected, you're going to face persecution, aren't you? And here are people who when they start living for the king, which invites all the hostility of the old age, because there's been no real change in their heart. They just love the idea of going to heaven, and they love the idea of peace and joy and forgiveness and everything else, but there's no real root, no real heart change. Whoa, it's like picking up something hot and you just let go of it straight away. You know, we know people, don't we? They've been converted. It all seems to be, they're brimming with joy. They can't stop talking about it and everything's. And then within a year, they've gone. And we never see them again. Because as soon as the opposition or hostility comes, they put it down. You get this sort of sense of you in Matthew 5. Jesus says, but I tell you not to resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other cheek to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him two. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. You've heard that it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I say to you, love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you. Pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. This, again, it's revolutionary stuff. Jesus is saying, when the kingdom comes and you become part of the kingdom, actually, you're going to get slapped on the face. You're going to have... you're going to be cursed. You're going to be persecuted. Now, anyone who isn't a true child of the kingdom, when that happens to them, they say, oh, I don't want anything to do with it. And they abandon it. Okay. The third group, then, this verse 22 group, when we see them and they're indistinguishable from God's people initially, they look like God's people, they sound like God's people, they act like God's people, and therefore we think they're converted. But they were never really converted. Why? What is it they can't give up? Verse 22.
Idols.
Idols, yeah.
Desires of the flesh.
Desires of the flesh, yeah. They're all right answers. Go on, do you want to say any more? Yeah. That's right. But then a Christian would say, I bet my heart's full of idols. And I'm all the time fighting against sin. So why is it this gets them in the end and doesn't get a child of the kingdom in the end? I agree with you completely. I'm not disagreeing with that. Has the preeminence. So what does it show that's always been going on inside them? Where do they feel more at home? They feel more. That's right. When the word of the kingdom comes and they are changed, and there are changes in all their things, the reason why the thorns are always there and they don't uproot the thorns is because ultimately they are more at home in the old age than in the new age. Thorns are part of the old age, it's part of the curse. The values of the old age have more currency with them than the values of the new age. The way things are in the old age, they feel more at peace and happier with that than with the things of the new age. So that's why the things of the old age are never really dealt with. I mean, you know, they may hear sermons and feel guilty and feel bad and go through times and through the support and help of Christian friends and all the rest of it, there is change. But ultimately, there's always things that are going on, competing. And those things are always going to win out in the end, because ultimately these people are more at home. Because they never belong to the new age, they're more at home in the old age. And that's why the old age, the thorns, in the end, get them. They won't make a clean break, and ultimately they revert to type. The king never had their heart. Something comes along, someone comes along, always competing for their time, their money, their energy, their hopes, their ambitions, whatever. And in the end, it conquers their heart and crowds out the word. With respect to that, then, just look at the dangers. Okay. He receives seed among the thorns. Does that make sense? I don't want to run on it. Does that make sense? Yeah. If you look at the dangers, okay, the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches. What are the cares of this world? Money, yeah? Family, money, family, career, Self, yeah.
Comfort.
Comfort, yeah. Success, job, mortgage, sport, marriage, children. They're all things that belong to this old age, aren't they? I'm not saying, therefore, our husbands and wives belong to the old age, and you know what I'm saying. They're all part of the old age. So if you look at those things, okay, now all of us, we have jobs, we have hopes, don't we? We have money, we may have children, we may have a spouse, we like sport, we like holidays, careers, all those sorts of things. God's people have all those things, don't they? So what is it? You can see the danger is very, very subtle, isn't it? The things that are dangerous don't in themselves appear to be dangerous. So the people who get choked by the weeds, it's not that they suddenly go into a life of they suddenly start chopping the heads off chickens and going into black magic and debauchery and all sorts of terrible things. They just simply want to have a good career. They simply are worried about their health. They're simply be preoccupied with their children. They're simply think, oh, I'm really interested in politics and that takes up all my time now. Do you see? They're not things that are wrong, apparently. But they all belong to the old age. That's where the priorities are. It's the deceitfulness of riches, isn't it? Deceitfulness of riches is simply, I if I work hard and earn a good wage, I feel secure. So the longer I work and the more money I have, the more secure I feel. Or I feel that my status is dependent on how much money I earn. So I want a good status, I want to be respected, so I want to earn more money. They're things that don't appear to be dangerous in and of themselves, but that's exactly how the old age works. And it's those things that rule in the end. So a person may simply say, we don't see you so much at church. Oh, I've been doing a lot of work and things have been very busy. Oh, how are things? Well, I've got this job opportunity and you talk to them and it's less and less about Christ and more about their career. And they go out. And they just think they've made a good career move. But the word has been choked. So it's things which in themselves don't appear to be dangerous. I mean, Paul talks about it, major turn to 1 Corinthians 7. He says, but this I say, brethren, the time is short, so that from now on even those who have wives should be as those who had none. Those who weep as though they did not weep, those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice, those who buy as though they did not possess, and those who use this world as not misusing it, for the form of this world is passing away. He's saying, look, if you're living in this old age, don't put your slippers on and get nice and cozy and comfortable. That's what he's saying. He's saying, don't bother about your spouse and all that. He's not saying that. He's saying, look, don't live as though this is the only age that counts. If you live as though this is the only age that counts, the word will be choked. So it's very, very subtle. These things don't appear to be dangerous because we just become like everybody else, because everyone else is living like that. But unless you uproot those things, then they choke out the word. And of course, there's a sense, isn't there, where you don't know whether people don't know who's a thorny ground hearer. I can think of men who have been in the ministry and people have been converted on their preaching. Nothing to do with it anymore. What's gone on? He never thought he was a thorny ground hearer. But the thorns have taken over and choked it out. Okay, so the kingdom doesn't come irresistibly, as apparently can be resisted. And it can be resisted by the ruler of this age, by the hatred of the world, by just the busyness and being part of the old age. In the end, you felt more at home here than you did in the new age. And they all make the word unfruitful. Okay, right, racing on. Just anything else which tells you about the coming of the kingdom as being progressive from this parable?
A lot of work and not much reward.
That's right. That's right. Do you want to say any more about that, Mark?
You kind of think if you preach the gospel, there'll be a lot of response. And even when you see people receive it with gladness and joy, you think, it's really encouraging. And then you kind of see falling away, not really turning up, and no love for the Lord. And the
Yeah.
That's the way the Lord's.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Most people aren't going to be bothered because we'll tell them the word of God and they won't even remember it. So that's the wayside here is. And then, as you say, some people will think, oh, you know, so and so's been really converted. They heard the gospel for the first time and, oh, they're so enthusiastic. And the next year they're off the. And we can be so discouraged by it. And particularly the third group, who we feel were the Lord's and turn their back on it. It's a slow work, isn't it? It's very slow. It's there's a delay. You have to sow. If you sow the seed, you don't suddenly get a harvest. You have to sow, and then there's quite a gap before you get harvest, isn't there? So there's nothing rapid about it, nothing dramatic about it. It's not instantaneous. And if it is instantaneous, be suspicious, because there are those who receive the word with joy. Be suspicious about that. The seed has to germinate, the crop has to grow, the harvest has to ripen. Fruit bearing takes time. And that means if in our own evangelism, we need to be patient, don't we? Very, very patient. If you're building a church, you won't just simply say, well, you know, it's not going to be crash, bang, wallop. Sometimes it is, in the goodness of God, but for most churches, in most ages, it's not. It's slow and progressive. And we'll be realistic that not everyone's going to believe, and most people won't, and most people reject it. What always gives us optimism, though, and what always gives us boldness on this model, the sower?
There is a harvest.
Sorry, yeah, there's always a harvest, yeah? Yeah, so we're always optimistic, aren't we? And, okay, we need to, you know, we'll talk about these things maybe in the time to come. Everything is to be a servant of the word, and we need to think about our evangelism and so on. But sometimes it isn't because we get our evangelism wrong. It's just simply because it's the world and there are four types of response. We mustn't reproach ourselves needlessly in some things when actually it's just what we should expect. But I can always be bold because I know that when the seed is sown, there will always be good ground hearers. Okay. I suppose one final thing, because I'll just say, is the coming of the kingdom is mundane. It's ordinary. There's nothing cosmic about this, is it? You're sowing seed. Nothing can be more ordinary and mundane than sowing seed. It's not very exciting, is it? You just take a bag of seed and you scatter it around. Where's the excitement in that? It's all very ordinary. You'd hardly know it was even going on. Really, would you? I mean, there are people coming into the kingdom all over the world. But how many people know that's going on? God's kingdom is coming, but how many people in the world actually know it's coming? Most people don't even know it exists. So Matthew, through the parable, is saying to the Jews, look, don't expect it to be old age ends, new age begins. Expect the coming of the kingdom to be ordinary, slow, steady, unnoticed. Expect the coming of the kingdom to be progressive. Because it's sowing before this harvest. Expect the coming of the kingdom to be resisted. Because the old age still goes on. So the ruler of the old age will try to stop it. The old age will hate everyone who turns to this. The old age will try and say, live by our values, live by our values. Just carry on as you are. And all ways of choking the word. But praise God, there will be harvest. The kingdom will come. There will be those who love and adore the king. And there will be fruit. Final question then. If we're to be good ground hearers, not all good ground hearers yield the same crop, what does our fruitfulness depend upon? Sorry?
Uprooting thorns.
Yeah.
Endurance.
Understanding. Being watered. Obedience.
Prepared hearts.
Yeah, prepared hearts. These are all right answers. I'm not disagreeing with them. That's the big thing, really, is the amount of seed as well, isn't it? The more seed you sow, and you do all the other things, uprooting and everything else, what will you get? The more seed you sow, you'll get more what? Get more harvest, won't you? Get more fruit. So some Christians will bear fruit 100-fold because much more seed is going into their hearts. So every child of the kingdom will bear fruit, but some will yield more fruit, bear more fruit. So how much am I giving myself to the word of the kingdom? How do I respond to the voice of the king? Because my fruitfulness will be in proportion to how much of his word I hear, and to how much of it I respond, and to how much of it I obey. So that's why Jesus says, he who has ears to hear, let him hear.